Chapter 6. There must always be a Stark at Winterfell. Jaime intended to feel enormous satisfaction, not to mention pure vindication. So much for this heralded army of the dead. The letter from Lord Bolton had made very clear that he hadn't seen so much as a single twitching bone in nearly 2 months at the Wall. And the only evidence Robb Stark had offered to anybody was that Jon Snow had returned as the sole survivor of a scouting mission to the far north, with a story of an army of millions. The only wonder was that anyone else had fallen for it. Jaime was planning to enjoy marching down to the cellars to shove Ned Stark's face in it, that the Boltons now had his keep and his titles. But it was difficult to feel satisfied when Bolton's men came into the throne room, two of them dragging Bran Stark, tear-stained and snotty with his skinny wrists and ankles both manacled and badly galled, even bloody in places. His clothes and his face were disheveled and dirty, and he looked ridiculously small at the foot of the throne. Even Robert, who was in a permanent glower these days, had a bit of a pause looking down at the child. "You had to chain this fearsome specimen twice over," Jaime had said to the chief Bolton man, not bothering to conceal his disdain. "Were you afraid he was going to stab you all in the night?"
"He tried to run 11 times, the man returned surly. 3 times after we chained him. Made it easier to catch him again."
Bran burst out. "You should have let me go," in a shrill, tearful voice. "You have to let me go," he added, so desperately that he was actually yowling up at Robert. "There has to be a Stark at Winterfell." Robert surged up out of the throne, his face darkening with rage, and he stomped down to the floor to loom over the boy and snarled,
"There'll never be a Stark at Winterfell again. As soon as I have my hands on your traitorous dog of a brother, he'll go on the block right before your traitor father, and if you don't want to go with them, you'll get on your knees right now and admit your treason and beg forgiveness. Do you hear me, boy?"
Bran cowered back. Robert could have made at least 6 of him, and it was plain the boy was terrified half out of his wits. His mouth trembled as he stared up at Robert in terror. And then Jaime's stomach clenched, a sudden hideous anticipation that came out of nowhere except pure gut instinct, just before Bran quavered out, "We're not traitors. We're not. Please, I have to go back." He hadn't finished talking before Robert was bellowing for someone to stuff the boy in the black cells along with Ned. And Jaime had time to talk him out of it. "He's 11, he said. "Of course he believes in the fairy story. They wouldn't have trusted him with the truth. He's barely older than Tommen. We're not putting him in the black cells. We'll put him in a room under guard." And Robert growled at him,
"Get the whelp out of my sight before I change my mind about it."
So Jaime just took the boy himself, jerking his head to a few of the guards on the throne room to come along with them. "Are you trying to get yourself executed?" he said in irritation to the boy, who was still sniveling in small gasps as they went down the corridor. "Keep your mouth shut from now on, and when the king tells you to get on your knees and beg pardon, you do it." "I haven't done anything," Bran said. "They killed Hodor just because he didn't understand." His voice broke into a sob, and Jaime's throat tightened. "Your brother should have worried about that before he raised a rebellion," he managed, pushing the boy into the next empty room. It was far enough away from the throne room. "Go get one of the smiths up here to take off those manacles," he told one of the guards, who nodded and went. When Jaime turned back around, Bran had sunk onto the narrow bed, curled his knees up with his arms around them. "It's not a rebellion," he said. "We're not lying. The Long Night is almost here. We only had 3 hours of sun left at Winterfell." He lifted his head, and Jaime followed his gaze out the window. to where the sun had just slipped down behind the Kingswood out of sight, though it was scarcely past 3 in the afternoon, and the sun hadn't risen until 9. Jamie stood still a moment, a knot tight in his belly, and then looked back and twitched. Bran Stark was staring at him, an odd blankness in his face. "You know we're not lying," he said. "You know!" Jamie stared at him, and then the boy's face crumpled up into something bewildered and angry. "Why are you helping? Everyone at Winterfell went to help. There wasn't anyone left but Hodor, so he could help me if I needed. And he couldn't even talk. They put him in a pen, and they kept sticking him with spears, and he just kept trying to get out, and..." He was crying again, shaking his head. "You're worse than the Night's King. I don't care if you all die. I hope Rob lets you die." He buried his face against the tops of his knees and didn't uncurl again. Rob had held his nose and played out the little game with Jory in the mess. And Tyrion was right. Stannis had watched them with eyes gone suddenly narrow. And afterwards, before retiring to his quarters, he'd said to Rob in his abrupt way, "All right, dividing the command is a bad idea most times, but you're not a fool, and Lannister's not wrong. Once you're away from the wall, you'll be on your own no matter what. No sense in using a lesser man for the job. We'll try it." And Rob had also held back the answer he'd wanted to make, and had settled for only inclining his head a little before Stannis had gone. But he'd been paid back for his hard-won patience, because though the hours of light were still dwindling, his hopes were rising 10 times quicker. It had only taken a week to reconcile himself to Stannis's high-handed pride. The man had too much of it. Rob had seen his work at Castle Black himself, knew it was going forward at the other keeps as well. Each day a sharper discipline taking shape, driven with a ruthlessness that would have been cruelty if Stannis had not made plain, before he began, what it would serve. "We'll be setting a new standard each morning," he'd said, his voice projecting crisp and clear over the assembled ranks he'd ordered to gather, men crowding the yard and filling all the upper walkways around it. "Any man who doesn't meet it in the morning gets told. Any man who can't meet it in the afternoon is on latrine duty that night. Any man who doesn't meet all the current standards the next morning gets 10 lashes. If that sounds harsh, it is. We have 2 months before we have to hold these keeps. Outnumbered 10-1 if we're lucky. By the end of this week, we'll have sorted who can learn in time and who can't. If you can't, if you have to take the lash more than twice, you're out. You'll be going on labor duty, because that's how we can use you. The rest of you I'll be able to beat into shape. None of you are going to like it. None of you are going to like me. I don't care. Not here for you to like me. I'm here to win this war, and to save the realm. If that's not what you are here for, you're in the wrong place. Follow your orders, work hard, and we'll win. That's all." And no one did like it. But it was working, and they all liked that. Now Rob couldn't walk 20 paces along their defenses without finding men on alert. Patrols went every hour of the day, each man going out twice, once along the ground on the southern side and once up on the wall. Each time they went on patrol, they were expected to bring back a bundle of kindling. Each time they went up, they were expected to carry the bundle to the top, along with a bucket of ice and snow. Stannis had brought more smiths with him, and all of them had been set to forging caltrops with one notch made to hold a bit of dragon glass. Other men had been set to whittling similar holders out of spare wood. When they had great heaps of the things, he sent men from the laborers out along the wall with orders to go halfway and meet a party from the next keep over, and starting from that meeting point, to embed the holders into the surface, pouring melted snow over each one to fix it into place, and setting slivers of dragon glass into them. When it was done, he ordered caches of other supplies to go up onto the wall, arrows, pots of pitch, which other men were sent to gather from the nearest tar pits, torches and spears and clubs. As the patrols grew sharper, Stannis began rewarding the men with the right to take another 10 minutes on each patrol to set snares and gather whatever they caught. Even if it was no more than a squirrel or a rabbit, the fur and hides were scraped and cold-smoked and tacked onto the shelters on the wall to make them more snug, and all the meat went into the great cooking pots and made their porridge far more hearty than Rob would have imagined from so little hunting. It would have almost made him ashamed to have refused to give way if he didn't feel a deep increasing urgency towards his own work that made it impossible. He hadn't properly recognized the difference between the work of the defense and the sorties before. He'd been trained in the infantry and mounted drill of his father's men-at-arms, and he'd started his own men on that with the help of Sir Roderick and the drill masters of his lords and of the Night's Watch. But the wildlings and the raw recruits from the north had made little progress, because that, too, should have also been the study of 10 years or more. Now Stannis had stripped back the drill for the defenders to a sort that any man of modest wit and strength could learn in a month's time. He had men drilling in lines, teaching them the strokes and rhythm of a short pattern to be carried out together, how to advance when a man before them went down, and how to retreat to the rear when they were tired. It was plain to see it had been the right thing to do, and to strip out those men who were too clumsy and awkward to master the work. Now the rest would help and strengthen one another instead of the bad getting in the way of the good. They'd all know what to do, no matter how dreadful the fighting got, and they'd hold the walls as long as they could be held. But Stannis was training soldiers, and Rob wouldn't be leading soldiers. He understood now. He needed more than that, more even than trained knights and mounted fighters. He needed heroes, warriors of such courage that they'd ride unswerving of their own accord into the face of monsters, to be surrounded by them with no hope of retreat, no chance of mercy, knowing that almost certainly they would be going to their own deaths. And he didn't think he could train that into men. They had to choose it for themselves. They would all have to answer the call from their own hearts. He did try his best to learn from everything he saw Stannis do, and drove his own men harder as well. Now they were going beyond the wall twice a day, once on foot to save the strength of the horses, to learn the ground nearby and harden themselves to the cold. And now that they had more of the dragonglass, he sent to the other keeps for the best riders and swordsmen so they could begin to train them in the plan of battle as well, and establish more than one sortie force, in case they were attacked at the same time in more than one place. But he took each man aside, first in private, in the small room he'd taken for a study of sorts, overlooking the yard, to speak to them of the charge they were taking up, and be sure they knew what they were doing. "This isn't a question of honor or courage," he said. "You've already proven both. I'm asking if you can follow me knowingly to death, for that's where we'll be riding, each time we go out against them. I ask you to tell me honestly if that's a road you can go down, knowing I'll think no less of you if it's not. There's other work for your sword to do, and more than enough danger for everyone here to face." "Yes, I know," Brienne said steadily, when he asked her first. "Will that be all, my lord?" He gave her a nod and let her go, and let a sigh go after. He couldn't be glad of the answer, only grateful for it. He didn't ask John or Jory, they'd already answered. But one after another he called the others to him to say the same words, and hear their answer. Tormund only shrugged a bit and said, "Man's gotta die sometime." The Hound said, "Why the fuck not?" Sir Alistair stared at him, mouth downturned and bitter, and said in his sour way, "I made that choice a long time ago, Lord Stark," and went stomping out again. Ygritte gave him her slanting smirk and said, "So full of gloom. You can all plan to die if you want. I plan to stick a dragonglass spear up the Night King's arse and get me a pretty southern boy to warm my bed after." And then she smacked John on the rear as she went out of the room, passing him on the stair coming in with a report, and added,
Or maybe before, if you're lucky, Snow. And made him squawk. What? He said, red, and darted a look at Rob, who couldn't help grinning at him. Not everyone said yes. John's friend Ed, who wasn't ever going to make much of a rider, was silent a moment, and then he said finally, if I thought I'd do some real good, I'd say yes, but I think I'm going to fall off the fucking horse the first time I try to stab a white, and I'll just get pulled down for naught. Rob nodded, a private surge of relief through him, and said, go to Lord Stannis. I know he needs more men who can command on the heights. And Ed nodded back and went. But as some men left, others began unexpectedly to come. Men that Rob hadn't known to recruit. A hulking Thenn named Loboda, his face a map drawn in scar lines and a war axe as big as a cartwheel on his shoulder, came from one of the wildling keeps, leading six other men of his clan, and said shortly, don't like crows, and you're as good as one, but you've kept your word to Mance, and Meg speaks for you, so we'll ride with you. Some of Stannis's men put themselves forward, other wildlings, his uncle Blackfish and four of the men he'd brought with him, other men of the north, two of the Manderleys, and Torrin Karstark, and Lord Umber himself, the Great John, who, when Rob protested his years, glared at him in outrage and roared, get a sword and come unto the yard with me, you young whelp. We'll see if I'm too old. I didn't mean it so, Rob said hastily, and Lord Umber scowled at him a moment longer, and then said gruffly, more honest, I'm not past my hale years, Stark, but their end is near, and I've sons enough to come after me. I'd spend them on the field instead. And Rob bowed his head and agreed. His corp of riders did grow smaller in the end. He'd taken many a man for skill in battle who withdrew, but they grew tighter as well. Even in another week, they already rode and fought better, as if he, too, had pruned out the men who couldn't do the work and left behind only the ones who could hold up their brothers in arms. He wouldn't be able to prove it until they faced the dead at last, but he felt in his heart that they, too, now had only to work hard and win, even against the numbers coming toward them. His men would get him to the Night's King, and he'd get ice into that frozen heart, and the wave of dead men would break upon the wall behind him. It made him feel far more in charity with Lord Stannis, who perhaps felt something like it himself, for that night, when Rob came back in late with his men, after they'd practiced skirmishing against one another out on the fields before the wall, Stannis was waiting outside the mess hall to meet them, and not with a company of men at his back this time. Rob sent his own men on inside, although Brienne frowned, and he saw her stop and wait in the doorway, and Stannis said to him, "Watched you from the wall. You're a quick study. When you don't have time to make the wrong men right, you're better off with only the right men. And you've got them now. I've sent word to the other keeps to send us some more of their laborers. As soon as they come, we'll put 5,000 of them out into the field, with shields and padded clubs, and you'll work on driving your force through them as fast as you can. That's the practice you need." Rob was nodding before Stannis had even finished. "Aye, we've already gotten quicker, running against one another, but it's not the same as being surrounded." Stannis studied him a moment longer, his face set in its stern lines, and then he said abruptly, "Tyrion Lannister's not as clever as he thinks it is, because his trick isn't one. If Robert doesn't come, if you and I win this war and save the realm from the Night's King while he refuses his aid and sits in the Red Keep, drinking and whoring, he's no king. That's the plain truth, and any man of sense will agree, whether you swear a charge against him or not." Rob stiffened, his back tightening, but he didn't answer otherwise. It was true, and he felt so himself. Stannis nodded a little. "But Lannister wasn't wrong either, because I do need you. Not to make a show of things," he added, I don't care about formalities. If Robert fails in his duty to the realm like the Mad King did, makes himself an oathbreaker, I can call him one myself, and I can win a war against him myself. I expect most of these wildlings won't be eager to go back to living in hide tents on frozen fields after this war is over, and they'll know by then that I'm a man who can take them to victory. Don't need your help for that. I'd like it. You're a man I'd want by my side in battle, but I don't need it. But what I don't have is a son. It took Rob aback. He'd been tensed for some demand, another threat. He stared at Stannis, who had looked away in a small grimace. His mouth narrowed for a moment, with something that might have been regret. Strong enough to break through the dour shell. I would have liked a son, he said. But Shireen is all I have. She's a good girl. Smart, quick, brave. She'll be a worthy heir, but she'll need a man at her side when I'm done. And you're the man I'd have. Not to make some cheap bargain, but because you're worthy of her. Rob found a prickling in his eyes and in his throat, an unexpected thought of his own father. So far away, who would have been proud to know that another father thought of him so? He'd seen clearly by now that Stannis was bent on rule more than on his own duty, with too much hardness and ambition. And yet now Rob felt he'd been given a sudden glimpse of something far more true in the man, if buried deep. It wasn't a thing he could answer with caution. Lord Stannis, he said, I've learned enough of you these weeks to value your trust and the honor you would do me. I only wish I were free to accept it. I know Lady Margaery has married Joffrey now, he added when Stannis frowned. But the promise my father made House Tyrell was that when the war was over, I'd go and be made known to her, and it would be her choice whether to claim me. That wasn't a mistake or a poor choice of words. He was trying to give fair value for what they promised us. A promise they kept. 37 ships came into Bear Harbor, packed with grain. A treasure we couldn't have bought even with all the coin we had. Every meal we eat now comes from their granaries. Without their gift, we'd be trying to defend the wall against the enemy while starving slowly to death. So I must keep our promise in return. And if Margaery chooses to forsake her vows to Joffrey and have me instead? He went on, heavily, a price he hadn't fully thought through before. Then I will be hers, as little as I'd care to be wed to a woman who'd do such a thing. Stannis gave a small grunt. If you march into the Red Keep to offer yourself to Margaery Tyrell, you and your father will both go to the block before you've exchanged a word with her. Aye, Rob said grimly. I don't mean to do anything foolish, but I'll have to find a way if I live. And I can't promise to marry anyone else until I've kept my word to her. Stannis considered him a moment, thoughtful. Fair enough, he said. If you were the sort of man who'd break an oath when it was hard to keep, you wouldn't be the one I want for Shireen. When the war's over, you'll settle the business one way or another. And if I can't have you, I'll have your brother Bran instead. Rob nodded. That was a bargain he could make. For himself and Bran, and one Stannis had the right to ask in return for his own aid, as vital as anything House Tyrell had done. That's an oath I can gladly take, my lord, he said, and clasped Stannis's hand when the man held it out to him. They went in together, and Rob gave Brienne a smile as he went past her, letting her see his gladness to reassure her. Hope. True hope in his hands, and no lingering unease beneath them. He was glad to have matters with Stannis on a true footing, a relief to have shrugged off the subterfuge like an uncomfortable coat, although he felt he'd have to speak with Tyrion now in turn. He didn't think Tyrion had any great affection for Robert, but Robert's sons were his nephews, and Rob knew he couldn't lend himself to any act that would betray his aid either. But he went to sleep with his spirits lighter than they had been in months,
And he was still smiling the next morning at the breakfast tables with John and Stannis and Lord Commander Mormont. They were discussing the line of keeps, trying to guess which ones might be targeted, if the Night's King chose not to divide his forces.
The Night's Fort is the largest, aye, but the Shadow Door there has never been breached, Lord Mormont was saying.
And then Rob jerked straight from the table, his heart pounding, and looked across to see John staring back at him with equal horror.
Lord Stark? Mormont said,
but Rob couldn't listen. He was already running out of the hall without knowing exactly what he feared. John was on his heels, and Brienne and Clegane came after at a run. Mormont and Stannis were not long behind them and caught them up in the courtyard.
Stark, what is this? Stannis said sharply. Are you ill?
No, Rob said, barely a whisper. His throat was thick with horror.
It's Bran.
He's not dead, John said, half begging for reassurance. He's not dead, Rob.
No,
Rob said. He was certain of it, without knowing how.
But they've sent him away, truly away, for too long, not just a few days' ride. There's no Stark in Winterfell.
Stannis was eyeing him narrowly. He glanced at Mormont, who said, in the cautious tones of one trying to understand a hysteric,
Even if they have, Lord Bolton will surely have a care for the defenses.
It's not the defenses, Rob said. There must always be a Stark at Winterfell. And even as he spoke, a faint groaning sound came from around them, as if some large beast had sighed out and stirred a little. And there was a loud, explosive sound. Men shouted from the other end of the court, and he turned and saw that a narrow crack had opened up, a thin, dark line reaching from the base of the wall, almost as high as a man's head. John dragged in a shocked breath, and they ran to the wall and looked at it. It wasn't a great deal of damage, barely the thickness of a line of ink. But when Rob put his hand on the wall, he felt it straining somehow. A terrible pressure coming down, like a man carrying a heavy load, had been staggered by another weight added on the top of it. Peter had acquired a strong preference for the view from the southern exposure of River Run. The confluence of the forks met there, so the Lannisters weren't going to get a trebuchet pointed directly at the walls on that side. So far, the progress of the siege was holding relatively steady. There had been a few attempts to storm one or the other of the gates, but the ground around the keep was soft and marshy, and where it wasn't, it was just open water, and the defenders had ample supplies of tar and pitch with which to provide further discouragement. Almost as soon as the Lannisters finished another trebuchet, the defenders managed to smash one with a ballista, and so on. But it was very clearly only a matter of time, at least presuming that the young Lord Stark didn't finally come down from the north with his army, which seemed increasingly unlikely. So Peter felt it was just as well to have established a habit for staying on this side before the balance tipped. He'd claimed a small sitting room for himself. Catelyn and the children were using a larger one a short distance down the corridor. That hadn't been her own inclination, but he'd arranged to have a few of the servants turn up to repair the mortar in the walls in the room she'd been using on the other side of the keep, and then offered a word of suggestion at breakfast, and they'd settled into the new room, which he'd furnished beforehand with some toys and games to appeal to the children and keep them wanting to return. Since then, he was spending most of his days trying to find options. Staying in River Run was increasingly looking like the most temporary reprieve, but he disliked the odds of getting Catelyn and the three children out of the keep and to safety when the Lannisters finally breached the walls. He'd been making some minor exploratory efforts. It wasn't impossible to get word in and out of the keep. There were several ambitious young pages who had slipped down to the lower levels and swim out of the keep at his behest, and find someone on the banks in the Lannister camp who was equally minded to a bit of personal enterprise. He'd collected nearly a dozen such men by now. He could almost certainly have bribed his own way out, but that was only because he didn't especially matter. Unfortunately, there wasn't a single Lannister soldier who didn't understand that they were here to capture the Starks, and it would have taken more gold than Peter could get his hands on to bribe someone to let them out, and a more recklessly adventurous Lannister man to accept it. He was contemplating the situation without enthusiasm again that morning when a knock came on the door. "Sansa, my dear child," he said, putting aside the book. "Does your mother need anything?" "No," the girl said. "The woman, they'd have to say soon. She'd put on another 2 inches of height since they'd been in the keep. She'd grown even less girlish, even in the course of the journey, looking out of the carriage window behind them with tearful eyes as it had rolled down the road. And an hour on the way, she'd gulped a sob and turned back in and put her hands on her face and said, muffled, 'Father can't come. They won't let him.' 'That is enough,' Catelyn had said, quick and stern. 'You don't know that. Your father will do his best to persuade King Robert.' 'Yes, she does,' Rickon had said, an unexpected piping up. 'I know, too. Father's not coming.' Catelyn had stared at both of her children with a half-helpless expression, and Peter had indulged himself and put his hand on hers, long enough to give her a small shake of his head. Let them have their fancies. Only when they'd reached River Run, Arya had come barreling out to fling herself on her mother and the other children, and without even a greeting, she'd yowled in outrage. 'That rotten old king has father shut up! Why did you let him?' 'He had to stay,' Sansa had said, sharp herself. 'He'd taken an oath.' She'd been quiet since, keeping busy with needlework and growing, but she'd lost some of her soft girlishness, and now at his door looked almost hard, her eyes brilliant in her pale face. 'No,' she said. 'Mother's with Arya and Rickon. They're keeping her busy.'
'They're—'
Peter stared at her. 'I need your help,' she said. 'I need to get to Winterfell.' He paused, a strange unease sliding down his back, the same twisting sensation he'd felt back at the Red Keep when Eddard Stark had unexpectedly asked him to flee with Catelyn. It was extremely unwelcome. He'd been trying to forget about it since they'd gone, and also more or less trying to forget that he had gone with them, an inexcusably stupid thing to do. If he'd stayed, he'd have just raised himself high in the Lannisters' confidence, and Eddard Stark would have been chained up in the Black Cells, where many an unfortunate had met his end unexpectedly. He could have finished brokering the match between Joffrey and Margaery Tyrell, and come out of it with a reward of lands and a great keep, making him at last eligible to court the widowed lady Catelyn Stark, which he would have proposed to the Lannisters as a peacemaking match to bring her and her children back into the fold, winning them a pardon for the treason of the eldest boy, a proposal Catelyn would have accepted as soon as River Run was on the verge of being breached, to save the younger children. Now, instead, he was trapped inside River Run with her, surely to be charged with treason himself as soon as anyone paid enough attention to him. And so far, he hadn't been able to think of anything to do besides die with her. That had never been one of his personal ambitions. Dying with Sansa was even less of one.
"My dear," he said gently, "you know that the Boltons have taken Winterfell."
"Yes," she said. "That's why I have to get there. They've sent Bran away." He stared at her. "There has to be a Stark at Winterfell, but now Bran's gone, and Robb has to be at the Wall, so I've got to get there instead. I need you to get me there. There's a way in through the crypts," she added. "We all know about it. I thought I could hide in there."
"In the—" Peter shook his head a little.
"You can't simply hide in the crypts. How will you eat? You'll be found and caught. And that's assuming you can get out of River Run itself in the first place. How were you planning to do it?"
"I don't know," Sansa said, with a touch of petulant childish irritation, as if he were the one being unreasonable. I just know I have to do it. I need you to tell me how. She paused, and then she added, And we have to go now. If Mother finds out, she'll try to stop me. He realized, belatedly, that she was in a heavy northern traveling cloak and boot and a plain wool gown beneath, with large bulging pockets tied on. This is not wise, he said, but she only gave him an impatient look, and he found himself standing and reaching for his own cloak and purse, and in a burst of groping desperation to keep himself from doing anything truly insane, he said, All right, but if you want my help, you have to listen to me. If you simply go to Winterfell, you'll be captured and sent away too. Which wasn't precisely accurate. What Roose Bolton would actually do, of course, was marry her at once, and deliver him to the Lannisters, most likely in separate parts. If you want to stay at Winterfell, we're going to have to make a stop beforehand.
My lord, I know you didn't want the Stark boy manacled, the gold cloak lieutenant said awkwardly. But I thought, if you'd allow it, we could tie him, or something padded.
He was trailing off, presumably because of the expression Jamie felt on his own face. Can you tie up an 11-year-old boy to keep him from escaping? Jamie said through his teeth. Is this a joke?
It's not that we can't stop him, the lieutenant said desperately. It's only he keeps trying.
Apparently, he's guessed that if he keeps doing it long enough, you'll grow so overwhelmed by the task that you'll just let him go, Jamie said furiously, and the lieutenant slunk out with his tail between his legs. Jamie went back to his slogging, hideous mountain of paperwork, seething for almost an hour before he got up and went down to the chamber where they had Bran locked up, to find the door wide open and two guards, apparently the lieutenant had already felt the need to arrange for reinforcements, struggling at the window to keep the boy from going out of it.
For the love of the mother, Jamie said, and stormed across the room, got Bran by the scruff of the neck and the waist from between them, and hauled him in and dumped him on the bed.
Are you out of your mind? He demanded, looking out the window incredulously. The tower room was at the top of a 400-foot wall and half a mile of cliffs straight down to the bay below it.
I have to go back, Bran shouted at him wildly. I have to. There has to be a Stark at Winterfell.
3 days later, Jaime spent an entire afternoon of heart-stopping moments standing at the top of the King's Tower, staring down and just watching as Bran, who had finally managed to get out of the window by throwing his dinner into the face of one of the guards, crept down the face of the entire Red Keep like a very determined and very tiny ant who was going to be smashed into the pieces on the rocks below at any minute. They threw him ropes and shouted at him from windows, but he refused to take any help to come back inside and just kept trying to go down, even though they could get to any room he reached quicker than he could. And then, after the fourth hour of pure, unrelenting horror, Jamie suddenly realized that Bran was almost at the point where the keep met the cliff, meaning that he'd probably start trying to climb around on the sheer rock face to get to the top of the escarpment, and the sun was about to go down. Jamie grabbed one of the ropes himself and ran all the way through the keep and snatched a horse from a bewildered gold cloak about to go on patrol. He galloped out the crown gate and got to the cliffside in the last rays of sunset, the stone face already almost pitch dark, just in time to look over and see Bran take a handhold that crumbled away and left him barely clinging to the face, his breath coming in desperate small sobs that drifted faintly up over the edge. Jamie flung the rope around a tree and all but dropped himself straight down 20 stomach-churning feet, and managed to grab Bran just as he tried again and nearly fell again.
You idiot, Jamie panted, wrestling the boy tight against him and lashing them together with the end of the rope to stop him trying to fight.
You utter idiot! Hold still!
He hauled them up, hand over hand, every muscle howling. And the instant he got them halfway over the cliff's edge, Bran squirmed out of the ropes and got out ahead of him. Jaime didn't have to run after him, though, because Bran took 7 staggering steps and then fell down on his hands and knees, sobbing for breath. Jaime hauled himself up over the edge and stalked up to him, and Bran tried to crawl. And when Jaime picked him up, the boy tried to hit him, which landed with about as much force as a pillow.
"Just stop," Jaime said. "You're not getting away."
"Please," Bran said, gulping and incoherent.
"Please, I have to go back."
He was crying weakly in desperation as Jaime carried him back to the horse. Jaime got them both on, Bran still whimpering his pleas, and then he gathered the reins, and the horse was facing the wrong way, down the King's Road, away from the Red Keep. And for one instant, Jaime had the strange, almost overwhelming impulse to just keep going, to ride away with the boy, all the way to... Then Bran suddenly stopped in the middle of saying it again, "Please," and jerked up on a gasp and a deep, shocked breath, staring out blindly into the dark. He sat straight and trembling for a moment, and then he said,
"Oh,"
with utter relief, and just as suddenly sagged back, resting his head against Jamie's chest, and was limply asleep in an instant, like a mummer's wind-up toy that had run down. Jaime stared down at him, baffled and with an odd sense of something almost like disappointment. But the lights were coming on in the keep behind him, and he had to get the boy back, of course. That was what he'd meant to do. He slowly turned his horse around and let it walk back to its stable on its own, holding the sleeping child in his arms, with the dark road going the other way behind him. They were trying to patch the cracks in the wall wherever they found them, with melted snow and pebbles and dirt. So far, they'd only found cracks near the keeps, as if those were the points of greater strain. But reports were coming in of 1 or 2 new ones opening each day, and Rob couldn't think of anything he could do. He couldn't stand against the Night's King if he was at Winterfell, and even if he did go there, sneaked in through the crypts and tried to stay hidden in the belly of the keep, it surely wouldn't work for long. He wasn't trained for work like that, and he'd need to slip out at least every once in a while to get food and drink. In any case, there were too many men, too many spies at the wall, and they would have heard the story. There must always be a Stark at Winterfell. If he went away from the wall now, they would guess where he had gone and send word of it south, and the Boltons would tear the keep apart and find him. John wanted to go in his stead. They both knew it wouldn't work. It had to be a Stark. The name mattered. And it wasn't an accident that John didn't have the name. Lord Hoster Tully had given father his armies and his daughter to win the rebellion and rebuild his house, and so father could never in honor give John the name that would put him before Bran and Rickon in the inheritance of Winterfell. Not without the consent mother would never have given him. Rob had felt a burst of anger at her when he thought of it. And yet, as soon as it came, he was ashamed, because he knew too well that he could have spoken to her and father, and pressed them to arrange it in the south after John had gone to the Night's Watch, when it would no longer threaten Bran and Rickon, and would only give John happiness and comfort. Rob had thought of doing it, and then he told himself there would be time, and not to mar their going with a quarrel. And now here was the price they all had to pay for it.
"You could give me the name," John was saying to him, in desperation, the fourth night after Bran had gone.
The first crack at Castle Black had opened wide all over again during the dinner meal, and it had taken 4 hours to patch it as best they could. "You're Lord of Winterfell."
"I haven't the right," Rob said wearily. Only the king can do it. And then he looked up at a knock on the door. Sandor Clegane was on watch, and he opened the door and said briefly, "Ranger here to see ya," and let the ranger in. A man John knew, called Black Jack, but his face was blanched with the look of a man who'd just seen a horror, and he didn't speak at first until the door closed, and then he said, in a ghastly whisper, My lord, I've seen your uncle. He..." His voice was barely loud enough to hear, and Rob stopped him and made him sit and gave him a glass of brandy, while he and John waited, tense, until the man finally managed to tell them that Uncle Benjen had found him in the woods, but he'd been changed somehow. "He said to tell you," the ranger said, that he went too far beyond the wall trying to find the others. They caught him, and before he could get away, they, he swallowed. "He said they took him down the wrong road, so he couldn't go down the right one." The man stopped there and only shook his head when Rob asked him to say more of it. "He said that you must think of him as dead," he said finally, instead. "But he's going south to be the Stark at Winterfell until you can take back the keep. He said he'd take horses on the road and be there in a week. He took mine," he added. "I had to come back on foot. He's 3 days along already." Rob shut his eyes in a surge of deep relief, and John blew out a deep breath and sat down on the bed and bowed his head deep over his hands and knees. Rob gripped the ranger's shoulder. "Thank you," he said, low and quiet. "Listen now, don't speak of this to anyone. If the Boltons learn there's a Stark at Winterfell, they'll find him." The ranger shook his head. "I'll never speak a word of what I've seen again to any living man," he said, low and terrible. "And I'll see it behind my eyes every night until I die." He went out of the room, his head bowed, and Rob stared after him and exchanged a grim look with John. He didn't want to think about what could have been done to Uncle Benjen that would make a brave man blanch so, and yet not kill him. "They took him down the wrong road, so he couldn't go down the right one," John repeated softly, and Rob shook his head uneasy. The words felt heavy with meaning, a meaning he couldn't quite grasp, and yet saw out ahead, only barely out of reach. But whether he understood or not, Rob had no doubt that Uncle Benjen would reach Winterfell, and that he could conceal himself easily in the crypt and the Godswood. He'd been a ranger of the Night's Watch for 15 years. The cracks would still need patching for the next several days, but at least it now felt like putting a bandage on a wound that would soon heal. The next morning, Rob went looking for Stannis to tell him privately, and paused, taken aback at the large crack near the lift, which had reopened overnight yet again. Despite their work only the day before, the opening had been packed fresh with snow and ice and stones, and the Red Priestess was standing before it, 10 of Stannis's men gathered around to either side of her. Stannis stood watching as they chanted together, something that seemed less like a prayer than a warning. "For the night is dark and full of terrors. For the night is dark and full of terrors." 2 of the men stepped forward towards the crack with unlit torches, and she raised her hands together and called out words in a foreign tongue, and their torches bloomed out of nowhere with flames. They plunged them into the crack, snow and ice hissing steam as they melted. She made a gesture of pressing her hands forward and spoke again, then waved the men to take their torches back out. But they emerged unlit and smoldering, and the flame stayed behind inside the crack. The melted water flowed over the opening, down the surface of the wall, and froze abruptly into stillness again. Behind the thin, translucent surface, the fire remained, leaping and dancing from inside the wall.
"I told you," Stannis said, glancing over at him.
Rob jerked to look at him as he flicked a hand towards the wall.
"No Septon ever did anything like that. or thought of trying to. I mowed along with the services of the Seven, like everyone does, but I never liked it. Always seemed like a pack of lies. But Melisandre is no liar. Her god has real power.
So it seems, Rob said low. Melisandre had turned from the wall and was coming towards them. She paused before him and smiled a little, tilting her head.
Now that you have seen a little of the power of the Lord of Light, perhaps you will be less quick to reject his aid.
She turned to Stannis.
My lord, only a little power was needed for this work, but if the wall grows weaker still, prayer alone will not suffice. A sacrifice will be required.
Sacrifice? Rob said sharply.
She turned to him.
Does that surprise you, Lord Stark? What that is worth anything is ever gained without pain and sacrifice. If you win this war, will many not have given their lives and agony to make it so?
Aye, Rob said, but there's a difference between giving and taking, and I'm glad to say we won't need your lord's help for this.
He added, turning to Stannis.
The damage to the wall will be stopped soon. My uncle's come out of the wilds. He's gone to Winterfell.
Stannis studied him, face hard and thoughtful, and then nodded a little.
That's just as well. Better not to break something in the first place than have to fix it after. If you can manage the rest of the cracks until then, Lady Melisandre, we'll be grateful to you.
I will do whatever the Lord allows me, she said, and smiled at Rob thinly, before gliding away again.